Blog Talk Radio.
Davis. This is Tuesday, November 10th, 2015, and Ralph Pointer says, what's happening? Our call-in number is 347-857-3293. This evening, we're going to have a little departure from our usual roundup, the usual suspects, because Brother Pointer is a bit under the weather this evening. And Sister Lynn is trying to help him build up his strength. So we're going to have our co-host, panelist, Brother Larry, on to assist with our program this evening. Brother Larry Pinckney, a former political prisoner who really was his own liberator, as Jaleel Montekim says we must all be. In addition to that, Brother Larry Pinckney is a Black Panther. I want to acknowledge that Brother Larry Pinckney and Joe Myers are on the air this evening. Good evening, Brother Larry.
Good evening, my sister Betty. I am delighted and honored, as always, to be on the show. I'd like to say very quickly that I am certainly going to be certainly turning to you and deferring to you with respect to where we go and how we go there this evening. I want to say right away, though, to all of our wonderful listeners, you know, all power to the people. Thank you for listening in and for participating in what's happening. Ralph Pointer and Lynn Stewart combined, I repeat, Ralph Pointer and Lynn Stewart combined, their years of service, body and soul service to the people, is well over 100 years. When you combine their many decades of service, can we do any less? I want to, you know, too many times we, everyday ordinary people, we forget that we are the modus and the modem for change. But people in our midst, such as Brother Ralph Pointer and Sister Lynn Stewart, need to be acknowledged and recognized for all that they have done and are still doing. And I remind you, combining both Ralph and Lynn's years of service to the people is over 100 years. Can we do any less? The answer is no, we can't. We must not. And as Ralph says, you know what? Black lives will never matter until they matter to black people. Seriously. And, you know, nothing happens without a demand, as Frederick Douglass said. So, having said that, I like to be succinct and to the point. I hope that people will also be succinct and to the point. I will make comments as appropriate. I hope, Betty, you keep me in line, my sister. Keep me in line. Make sure that I am doing what I'm doing appropriately. Again, I want to welcome everyone to Ralph Pointer's What's Happening, and I'm honored to be a part of it. Back to you, Sister Betty.
All right. Well, as I said, our panelists for this evening seem to be you and Brother Joel Myers at this time. But what I would like to do is to follow through with our usual procedure, and that is to read Ralph's credo. And this is what Ralph Pointer believes. The overriding element, every situation or circumstance in a black life is racism. Birth, elementary school, housing, health, food, etc. Black lives have never mattered except during slavery and other circumstances where money is being made by our labors for others. The modern death penalty, 80% black, moved lynching indoors. The police, as the army of occupation, have taken lynching outside again. The lynch mob is the racist system, including the courts and the media. Because the lives of our heroes and sheroes who once protected us in our community do not matter to us, the people. Our political prisoners are now dying in captivity. They are tortured and isolated. Only armed struggle can recreate our image in our own minds as well as the minds of others. Wake up. Now is the time. With that having been said, and once again I repeat, that's Brother Ralph Pointer's credo, what I believe. I would like to give you the lineup of this subjects for this evening. First, we're going to deal with an update analysis of oppression and colonialism through a discussion about the recent campaign debates that we may have been subjected to. Finally, I'd like to go next to an urgent appeal for our critically ill political prisoners, Seth Hayes, Mamiya, and Peltier. Then I'd like to give a summation of the Black is Back conference that was held in Washington, D.C. And for those of you who keep up with what's relevant in history, this month marked the celebration of the socialist revolution in Russia. I do believe, and Joel Myers or you, Larry, can correct me, but I think the Socialist Revolution took place in 1917 on November 7th, and the Russian workers and the Russian peasants overthrew the Tsar and the Russian regime.
Mm-hmm.
And last but not least, I'd like to give a shout-out to Brother Sekou Odinga, who, as we speak, is being interviewed at Mega Ebbets College in Brooklyn tonight. And that might delay a lot of people from calling in, because I'm sure and I sincerely hope Mega Ebbets is packed this evening in Brooklyn, as our brother is giving his wisdom and his advice on the struggle for freedom. So what I'd like to do, Brother Larry, since I've outlined the different topics for this evening, is leave it up to you and Joel. And Joel, can you hear us this evening?
Yes, I'm here. And I
okay,
hear you.
So I'd like to leave it to the two of you as to where would you like to start? Do you want to start with the campaign announcement, or would you like to deal with the anniversary of the Socialist Revolution? And what does that mean to us today? What does that Socialist Revolution and its success in Russia mean today?
Well, I think that the so we talk mainly about the problems and struggles that were involved in, but the Russian Revolution was the first time that the workers, a worker-peasant alliance led by the workers, rose up and actually took state power and held it for decade after decade after decade, having made very strong inroads against the ownership of the world by a handful of people, a handful of extraordinarily rich people who have called all the shots over many, many years. And the reason why is that they've created a system in which they control all the means of production, all the natural resources, all the money, currency, the banking system, financial system. And with that, they place the rest of us on a stranglehold, even though we're the ones that have created all of the wealth that they own. And in addition to that, as this program concentrates on a great deal, they've pitted us against each other, and they've stand up and used racism, different forms of divisions of society, pitting people of color, white people against people of color, men against women, straight against gay, and so on, so that they separate us. And while we're fighting each other, this tiny handful of people has been able to rule the world. And I think that the lesson of the Russian Revolution is that if we come together and we fight the system, not each other, then we have all the power in the world. All of the power that the rich and the super rich have is based on our complicity, because we go to work every day without rebelling very much, without organizing very much to change the world. We even don military uniforms and take up weapons to kill people around the world and to even risk our own lives doing so in order to, again, protect those investments. And it's a real offense to all of the traditions of the world going back to at least the time of the Ten Commandments, because what we're dealing with capitalism is a system that's based on theft, based on a handful of people owning wealth and property that they never created, and then from breaking thou shalt not steal in that way, they then enforce their theft by breaking thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not murder, as they set people against each other around the world and arm people to kill each other. And the third major commandment that they break, and the one that we really have to focus on, is thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor. Because in order to do all of this stealing and killing, they have to have a media that turns everything on its head, that makes the villains, the arch villains, into heroes and great people, and that demonizes people that are targeted, especially because they try to resist. And in addition to that, of course, it distracts people at every turn from the core of that real situation. So I think that we have to be very alert about this role of the media in bearing false witness, because that's really how many of our minds get misprogrammed and how we're kept in this perpetual slavery. If you look at capitalism, you could see that it represents the disappointment in the old Bible story about the people playing with the golden calf as the Ten Commandments were being brought down. You know, the people playing with the golden calf. Today, that golden calf has become the charging bull on Wall Street in front of Merrill Lynch. And it symbolizes in a certain way. I don't know whether it was consciously designed that way. I wouldn't be surprised if it were, in terms of the way the insiders understand it. But that's the spirit of putting money before everything else, turning everything into gold and human life. I think from the New Testament, where Jesus says that we are for the God of the living rather than the God of the dead, that they feed us a religion based on a dead, imaginary God, while the living people and life itself are turned into a hell on earth. I think that the Russian Revolution, whatever one thinks of what happened since and what stage the Russia and the ancillary countries there are in right now, that the Russian Revolution pointed forward, where working and oppressed people stood up and said no more, and we're hoping that they could extend it to the entire world. But in my opinion, what largely went wrong is that many people were bought off by the benefits of imperialism to the countries that dominated the world, and everything has been turned on its head, that instead of coming to the aid of the revolution, the capitalist class was still able to get many people in the working class to put on that uniform and fight for them against, again, misprogrammed to fight against this rising up of the overwhelming majority of the people of the world against the tiny handful. But this is another thing that we have to take into consideration, that many people who are working class and so on, in one way or another, are induced to think that they can benefit from imperialism and become bought off. And that's why we need a really organized movement to fight against the dominant efforts of the media, including newspapers, television, book publishing. We have to have our own media and our own organization to bring people together into a different consciousness of basically it's self-defense. Revolution is about self-defense, because if we don't get rid of capitalism, it'll get rid of us. And
Joel, let me interject. First of all, this is Larry Pinkney speaking. Let me say,
yes,
I definitely concur with you. Let me try to break some things down. I think the simpler we keep things, at least for me, I like simplicity. I like clarity. And, you know, we use the term, or the term has been used, capitalism. Well, what is capitalism? Well, it has been correctly said that capitalism is the extraordinary belief that the nastiest of men and women, for the nastiest of reasons, will somehow work for the benefit of us all, unquote. That's what capitalism is. And we need, in other words, it's a belief in a fantasy. It's a belief in self-denigration. It is a belief in allowing an elite to literally, not only figuratively, but quite literally, emaciate all people, black, white, brown, red, and yellow people, not only nationally, but globally. Also, there's one other thing I want to add. As I said, I like to keep things really clear. Revolution, because I can imagine that some people in the audience are saying, well, what happened to the Russian Revolution? Well, let's understand what revolution is. Revolution is a process. Unlike what Hollywood tries to tell us, revolutions are not overnight affairs. They are ongoing processes. They are processes that have to deal with not only trying and struggling for better conditions for everyday ordinary people, but they also, a revolution has to deal with what we call counter-revolutionaries, those who are determined that our efforts to improve and change the lot of everyday ordinary people, those who are determined to thwart those efforts. So let us not be confused. Let us understand that seeds, major seeds, were planted in 1917 in the quote-unquote Russian Revolution. But the Russian Revolution was not merely a revolution within Russia. It was a revolution of consciousness. And that consciousness is awakening today. I repeat, that consciousness is reawakening today in the year 2015. So just wanted to interject that, my brother, Joel, and I would love to hear and desire to hear your further thoughts on how that relates. When I say that, I'm talking about what you so eloquently presented relates specifically to today, to 2015. This is November 2015, and I know you can do it, my brother. Break it down for us.
Well, thank you very much. It's a very difficult task to fulfill in just a short period of time for anyone, and I'm a little bit daunted by it. But what I was thinking about all week is something that I had begun to mention during last week's show, toward the end of the show, and that is that right now we're facing this election year in which a show is put on to induce people to think that the real source of power is in the people that vote for the candidates that are selected by and by the big money and made famous by the media and so on, and that we have some sort of a choice. And they very frequently, what they do is, like, there are a handful of opposition candidates that are that run that the that at least in the reported results and probably in the real results get only a small percentage of the vote, and therefore the system can say, well, look, over 90% of the people voted for the Democrats and the Republicans, and therefore it's democratic that they who represent that handful of super rich can rule over the rest of us because, after all, we voted for it. But so what I think we really need at this point to challenge the election is to bring together the progressive forces who can see through a lot of this, these things, and to come together to hold an alternate election of people who have a legitimate humanistic outlook and who are not entrapped, at least to a degree, or breaking out of this capitalism, and here I'm referring to it as an ism around capital, that is a worship of that golden calf and setting us against each other as human beings, putting that golden calf first, that those who begin to see through that and want a really humanistic society, we should come together and hold an alternative election that will be a raising of consciousness about the illegitimacy of the current fraudulent elections that are taking place today, in which we will be induced to vote for war around the world. We'll have one hawk versus another hawk, and maybe some criticism from certain mild doves that really support the hawk's agenda and who create the conditions where the hawks can have their way and who suck up the oxygen from much of the opposition. That what we have to do is come together and have alternate elections to choose among the more advanced layers of consciousness and to bring people into that as a first way of participating in the kind of opposition that where we can present ourselves as really electing a future government through the alternate election. Whether we can fulfill that right now is another question, but at least it might be able to put the conscious aim on the agenda so that we can begin to come together and to choose a leadership and, to the extent possible, create a model structure of something that would be a legitimate government instead of what we have now, especially since I think the milestone of the Kennedy assassination, which has rendered all the succeeding governments invalid from the point of view of this electoral structure. So in which, like I say, the intelligence agencies displaced the even the old electoral machinery as the real core of power. So anyway, that's how I think that maybe we can apply it now. And of course, in the middle of the agenda of that would be that we relate to the political prisoners who have been imprisoned, incarcerated, and locked away and those who have been assassinated and or in various ways driven to death in order to by this machine that claims to be so democratic and uses that slogan as an excuse to invade every other country in the world. We have to come together and begin to envision ourselves as having the ability to be a legitimate people's government. By ourselves, I don't mean just you and me or the people listening here, but entire collections of people who are fighting for a better world. And it would be another thing to bring people together to overcome sectarianism, to create a forum where we can constructively criticize each other, and to the extent possible, put ourselves out there before the people as a real alternative to the world that exists today and which is being destroyed today by this tiny minority who exercise a subtle, fraudulent dictatorship in the name of democracy. We have to make that whole idea of a democratic republic actually come to life. And
you certainly have poignantly and very clearly, Brother Joel, made your point. I think that, and I hope that the audience's mind is running and reeling based on the things that you have presented. You know, I think also that we might want to keep in mind, and I use that word in mind very deliberately, you know, the South African, the late South African freedom fighter Stephen Biko said that the greatest weapon in the hand of the oppressor is the mind of the oppressed. And you alluded to that directly when you talked about Joel, the media. I refer to it not as the mass media, but as the vomit stream media. The vomit stream, because they regurgitate the vomit of the approximately 158 families. And I repeat, approximately 158 families control the entire United States, which in turn engages in neo-colonialism. And what do I mean by that? I don't like to throw out words and not explain
Larry?
Them. Neo-colonialism. Go ahead.
Larry?
Sorry. Yes.
Before you get into that explanation, I'd just like to remind our listeners that at this point we are really covering two topics. I see that Brother Tom Syracuse has recently joined us. And what has happened is we are discussing the fact that this is an anniversary of the Socialist Revolution in Russia. I believe the date was November 7th, 1917, as I said previously, that the Russian workers and peasants overthrew the Tsar and the oligarchy in Russia. And what we were discussing is, what does that revolution mean to us today? But we seem to have naturally so segued into the upcoming campaign and the debate of Friday evening. And Joel was explaining to us the relevance of how the topics are related to each other. So having said that, I want to let you know, Brother Tom, Ralph Pointer, unfortunately, is under the weather this evening, and we're carrying on for him, and all mics are open unless I hear too much background noise, and then I'll turn it off and turn it back on if you want to interject something. So once again, Brother Larry, you've got the mic, and after you, we're going to ask Brother Tom Syracuse if he wants to deal with either topic, the Friday night debate, I believe it was Friday night, or the anniversary of the Socialist Revolution in Russia, which took place November 17th, excuse me, November 7th, 1917. Back to you, Brother Larry Pinkney.
Thank you. Thank you very, very much, my sister Betty Davis. Let me, again, just try to be succinct. I was mentioning that we have an obligation. We everyday, ordinary, black, white, brown, red, and yellow people have an obligation to reach out in very simple, direct, or what I refer to as the simple and direct, eloquent language of the everyday people. And I had just quoted what Steve Biko, the late, great Steve Biko of South Africa, said when he referred to the greatest weapon in the hand of the oppressor is the mind of the oppressed. And I think Joel had made it very clear, who is this oppressor? You know, who is this oppressor? This oppressor are those who are pitting us off against each other, those who are exploiting us. Instead of using the word of exploiting, I just come out and say bloodsucker. They're straight-up bloodsuckers. They're vampiric. They're bloodsuckers. They bloodsuck us economically, socially, politically, in every possible way that they can. And then they back up their bloodsucking with their vomit-stream corporate media. It's time to unplug from that. The other thing I want to say very quickly, and I hope we'll go, I would love to go to Tom and hear that brother's thoughts and comments on this. The other thing I want to say very quickly, moving from Brother Stephen Biko to Brother Howard Zinn, who said that if, quote, if those in charge of our society, that is to say politicians, corporate executives, and owners of the press and television, if they can dominate our ideals, they will be secure in their power. They will not even need soldiers patrolling the streets. Why? Because we will control ourselves, unquote. This, and that's a direct quote from Howard Zinn. So I'm gonna end, you know, this segment right now, what I have to say. And if it's okay with you, Sister Betty, and you, Brother Joel, maybe we can hear from Tom.
Well, thank you very much. I apologize. I thought I would take a little nap at 8:30, and if it weren't for Sister Betty, I would still be sleeping. She called me up. Well, let's. I think maybe we could look at it this way. I don't believe that you can have a democracy without socialism. However, I don't believe you can have socialism without democracy. And I think that that is the lesson that we have learned over and over again since the Russian Revolution. The Russian Revolution took place when ordinary working people, factory workers, farm workers, and let's not forget those people that were in the army getting slaughtered when they rose up and they overthrew this corrupt elite that had been running that country for centuries. But unfortunately, the people that wound up in power in Russia were not the workers and the peasants, but they were a group of petty bourgeois bureaucrats that took over this country, the established what is known as the Soviet Union. And unfortunately, this has done irreparable harm to the whole concept of socialism, because now the capitalist countries were able to use this as a propaganda tool to poison the minds of workers and peasants throughout the world against socialism. So they would say, look what happened to the Soviet Union. It had degenerated into a bureaucratic elite, and then it finally fell apart. So that's the challenge. That's the challenge. I think that actually the word socialism, after all of these years, is no longer a dirty word among a growing number of Americans, and not only Americans, but ordinary people throughout the world, because they have seen so clearly that capitalism will not work, and it has to go. And the situation in South Africa, where they overthrew this racist apartheid regime, and they brought about a form of political democracy, but you cannot have true democracy without economic democracy as well. And that economic democracy is called democratic socialism. And so you have a situation in South Africa where blacks and whites can vote. One person, one vote. But it is the minority white population that controls that country. And the same thing is true here in the United States, where we have a black president and we have black office holders, but it's a small elite of almost entirely white capitalists that control the whole system. You cannot have democracy with capitalism, and you cannot have socialism without democracy. That's my opinion.
That is deep, my brother. That is deep. As you were talking, I was thinking of an article that came out I wrote a few years ago. It's called The Hypocrisy of America's Democracy. You can find the article globalresearch.com, The Hypocrisy of America's Democracy. But this is what came to my mind as you were talking. I love how you say that, because you're absolutely, absolutely right on point. Well, you cannot have any kind of real democracy without, and I like the way you broke it down in South Africa. One can vote. Blacks and whites, oh, wow, we can vote. But as what does that mean, really? What does that really mean? As the French, the late great French philosopher Albert Camus said, you know, what good does it do to give a man or a woman the vote and tell them they're free? That is not freedom. That is hypocrisy. And I think you are, again, also quite correct that an increasing amount of people are awakening to this hypocrisy. They/we are feeling the pain from East Coast to West Coast, from North to South, all over this nation, and quite frankly, throughout the world, throughout Mother Earth. So wow, you know, what can I say, bro? Great job. You made your point quite clear. And I think that whatever terms we might use, I like to keep it simple. You know, that's me. I like to keep it simple. Even when I was teaching university, I would speak in very simple terms to my students. I didn't, you know, it's important. I didn't demand that they read Marx's Das Kapital. I had read it, but so what? I like to keep it simple. What do they say with that term? Keep it simple, stupid. So I think that it's important what we are doing and what we are discussing this evening and how we've segued. I would like to throw out something, and I hope I'm not exploding something here, but what you were just saying, Tom, what are your feelings, if I may ask, and feelings, opinions, informed opinions, if you will, on the what I call the systemic game of the Republicrats, that's to say the Democrats and Republicans, in the so-called election, which I call a C-election. But I'd love to hear from you, and I'm sure our audience would too. What's your take on that, bro?
Well, this these are not debates. They are, I think you used the word game. They are shams to confuse the American public into thinking that we have some kind of a democratic system in this country. Now, on the Republican side, you have a bunch of people that are sitting there making outrageous, racist statements. And why are they doing this? Do you really think that somebody like Donald Trump believes that you can possibly build a wall from the Gulf Coast to the Pacific Ocean, another wall of China, and then present the Mexican government with the bill? Nobody in their right mind can believe such a ridiculous racist thing. And yet he says it. Why does he say it? Because he and other people that are in this Republican debate, like Dr. Carson is another one. They are, what is the mass base of the Republican Party? The mass base is ignorant, prejudiced, mostly white men who believe in all kinds of ridiculous notions. So they have, but there's a danger that these people are getting tired of the Republican Party because the Republican Party is not controlled by them. It's controlled by much cooler heads, a multi-billion-dollar elite. But so there's a danger that this mass base will desert the Republican Party and either not vote or form a truly independent right-wing fascist party. So that's the purpose of these people in the debate, to try to convince this racist, ignorant base that there's room for them in the Republican Party. But we know that if a Republican is going to gets elected as president, it will be a tool of the power elite. It will not engage in such ridiculous notions, thinking that the pyramids were built to store grain or something way, I mean. And what about the Democratic Party? Now,
thank you.
There's a danger that the Democratic
you.
Party will lose part of its base namely progressives, that are sick and tired of the Democratic Party. So that's where Bernie Sanders comes in, to try to convince progressive Democrats that there is a place for them in the Democratic Party. There is no place for either progressive Democrats or fascist Republicans in either one of those respective parties. Those two parties are run by the same people, the 1%,
right.
The ultra billionaires. Mm-hmm. This is the problem. When I was talking about democratic socialism, what do I mean by that? I don't mean a country that's controlled by a bureaucratic elite, and that's what the Soviet Union unfortunately degenerated into. I'm talking about a country that's controlled democratically, grassroots, from the bottom up, where the workers, they run the factories, where the farm workers, they run the agriculture. Not some central agencies controlled by bureaucrats on the one hand, or a small elite of billionaire capitalists on the other. And until the American public can realize that an ordinary factory worker, an ordinary farm worker, has more sense and more ability to run society than any of the CEOs or false politicians who are actually bringing this planet on the verge of a catastrophe. We have more sense than they do, and we're the ones that have to run society, not a small elite.
I hear you. Sister, you were trying to reach, brother. Go ahead, sister.
Yes, I wanted to alert you that we have a member of the Mamiya Coalition that just came on, and they urgently need to give us an update on our political prisoners. I want to come back. I want to emphasize we're going to come back to this discussion of the meaning of the socialist revolution in Russia in 1917, what it means to us today, especially in terms of a analysis of the I'd like to acknowledge.
Go ahead.
Are you in the house?
Okay, no, can you hear me? Because it seemed like we were breaking up a minute ago.
I hear you.
Oh, okay. How's everybody? Yeah, this is Razakhan. I'm with the Movement Coalition, but I'm also with Nation Time Judicial Research. We do legal research for innocent individuals, not only just in Pennsylvania, but throughout the U.S., But now, as far as Brother Seth Hayes and the hepatitis problem that he's been having, they just, November the 2nd, allowed him to go to the doctor. And even the doctor wanted to know why the medical personnel at the Sullivan had taken so long, you know, because the longer you take to get medical treatment, the worse your organs are damaged, you know, liver and stuff like that. But Brother Seth has been getting treatment, and they wouldn't allow him to use the nebulizer a week ago, and now they're going to allow him to use the nebulizer whenever he feels he needs to do that.
Okay, so his current status, brother, what exactly is his current status?
Oh, his current status is he's in serious medical trouble. You know what I mean? Because whenever you have a pulmonary problem, you know, breathing and stuff like that, emergency can happen at any time. Even though they telling him he could go to get his nebulizer whenever he needed, if it happens 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, then what?
Right.
Because the nebulizer is placed somewhere else. I can't imagine the danger it would be. You know what I mean? He carries an inhaler, but sometimes the inhaler is just not good enough.
Brother, will you tell?
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Will you tell the audience again who exactly you're talking about? Break it all down, somebody just came on the program. So go from there, if you will.
Okay, it's Brother Robert Seth Hayes. He's a political prisoner, Black Panther Party, Black Liberation Army individual, and he's been having serious medical problems for quite a while. He's at Sullivan, but they took him to Kawasaki, to Pulmonus, to give him an examination, and even the doctor, like I said, they was wondering why would they allow his condition to get deteriorate like it did before they brought him down there. So this is a situation that we have to really stay right on top of these individuals because they will use any kind of excuse, not to give medical attention to these individuals. And the point being, all of a sudden, is a hepatitis C infection across the nation. In all of these institutions, that's not just a coincidence. You know what I'm saying?
That's right. You are not just a coincidence. Right. You are right. You are right. In fact, this Brother Leonard Peltier, I'm so glad you brought that up because Brother Leonard Peltier is going through exactly the same thing. And other political prisoners are going through exactly the same thing. Now, I'm not a so-called CIA conspiracy theorist, and I say CIA because it was the CIA who came up with the term conspiracy theorist. They should know since they're the biggest conspirators. But I will say this, it is very strange indeed that so many of our political prisoners in these gulags that they dare to call prisons are coming down with this horrendous medical condition. But I just wanted to, as Smokey Robinson would say, brother, I wanted to second that emotion. But go ahead, go ahead, please,
brother. Yeah. But see, my theory is, if you get enough circumstantial evidence, lawyers are supposed to go on that. I was talking to a lawyer yesterday that deals with a mumia, you know what I mean? Now, I'm a paralegal. Now, we had this problem before. All of a sudden, all the inmates mysteriously got ill. Come to find out, the doctor from Drexel University here in Pennsylvania, they was experimenting on the inmates. You know what I'm saying? And they even wrote a book called Acres of Skin. And the same doctor is the one that invented that retina A. He's a multimillionaire, and he did this through experimenting on our prisoners. And it wouldn't be no far stretch. You got private corporations, you know, for profit. A medical corporation, it wouldn't be no stretch of the imagination to think that they are experimenting on these individuals and they're going to make sure all our political prisoners is caught up in it.
Well, they've done it before, brother. You know,
absolutely.
It is well documented, and I'm not just talking about the so-called Tuskegee experiment.
I'm talking about here in Pennsylvania. They got a book called Acres of Skin. And the doctor from Drexel University was called in. In fact, it was called. You're talking about conspiracy theorists. Here's the doctor in the Holmesburg prison calls his friend, a doctor from Drexel, and the doctor comes in. He say it was such an amazing experiment as far as he was concerned because all he saw was acres of skin, not human beings to be treated. You know what I mean? And that was the name of the book.
Well, you know, brother.
Excuse me, Brother Rosican, could you also give us an update on Mumia?
Okay, Mumia is having problems too with the same hepatitis. But now we're having a Friday, November the 13th, we're having a special town hall meeting for him. One of the state representatives will be participating in this. Her name is Vanessa Lowry Brown. She's a PA state representative. Sophia Shabazz, MD, will be there speaking, Pam Africa, and there's a delegation from France. Robert Ball, one of Mumia's attorneys, he will be there. And Professor Johanna Fernandez will be there, Dr. Suzanne Ross, Keith Cook, Mumia's brother, and William Camacho, and Joe Petty. We'll be having Friday, November the 13th, 1501 Cherry Street, the American Friends Building in Philadelphia.
And give us the time frame again, please.
It'll be from 6 to 9 o'clock. It's a free affair. We just want people to get in there and so they can spread the word, so we can all spread the word, because this is a serious situation.
While I have you gentlemen's ear, I'd like to let you know, in addition to the political prisoner Larry Pinkney that's on the line, Brother Joel was one of our political prisoners. He resisted the Vietnam War draft. And I want to give shout out to Tom Syracuse and the Manhattan Green Party. There was a point you all should know when these brothers in the Upper Manhattan Green Party led the fight almost single-handedly in New York City to free Troy Davis. And I will always remember and respect them for that. Anytime you heard about anything concerning Troy Davis in New York City, it was the Green Party Manhattan chapter that was out there on the front lines fighting for him. So I just wanted to say that everybody's credentials on this panel with regard to our political prisoners have more than integrity. You really know what Julia Montague says. We must be our own liberators.
That's right.
Brother Larry, I throw the mic back to you.
Thank you, my sister. And you know, brother, all my brothers and sisters out there, let me thank you. I think this information is incredibly important. Our political prisoners are us, and we need to understand that. Bottom line is, our political prisoners are us. If we do not free our political prisoners, then we are not free. It is very simple. It does not take a rocket scientist to understand that. So let us do as Brother Ralph Pointer always points out. Not trying to be funny here, but as Brother Ralph Pointer points out, you know, the Puerto Rican sisters and brothers took care of business, and they're still taking care of business. The Puerto Rican politicians, all right? La raza and Latino and Latina politicians, if you don't support our political prisoners, then we do not support you. It is high time that we also take up the same cry. So again, as we said in the party, all power to the people. Thank you so very, very much. I'm wondering, and brother, thank you for that update on Brother Seth Hayes and Brother Mumia Abdul-Jamal. Thank you so very, very much.
Okay, you're welcome. You're welcome. And although this is the brother in Louisiana, well, y'all heard that they overruled the judge's decision to totally release him.
Go ahead.
The judge even sent down a scathing a dissent, you know, because that's the Fifth Circuit, the same circuit that just told Obama that he couldn't keep the Mexicans here. You know what I mean? But everybody knows that the politics in the courts is just there. You know what I mean? They're racist. individuals, and if we went back to the Nuremberg trials, they would be on trial for murder. You know what I'm saying? People don't realize that a lot of the judges in Nuremberg was charged with judicial murder. Because what your state representatives or whoever your political bosses are tell you to do things that's inhumane, you're not supposed to listen to that. And we can't pay attention to them judges like that, and we got to call them out.
Right.
You know what I mean? They're going to always try to put black faces in places where and then we fall for it. You know what I mean? Yeah, they got this crazy old joker here. The Republican, they're running for Republican president.
Yeah.
Ben Carson. Yeah, Ben Carson. He would be the equivalent to the scientist that Hitler had. He was a German Jew. His name was Fritz Haber.
Mm-hmm.
He did so much that he could. He was the one that invented the poison gas. You know, he got he got all kinds of prizes for his inventions and poison gases and stuff like that. You know what I mean? He invented the fertilizer. But he was an individual. He wanted to show Hitler that he was more German than the rest of the German Jews. You know what I'm saying? So he was murdering them. And that's what our people do. They want to be
You summed it up. You summed it up, brother. You summed it up so well, so very, very well. When you said, and I want to repeat this, I hope our audience thinks about it. I know you will. They put black faces in places. Ooh,
that's
I like
right.
that. And it even rhymes, brother. They put black faces in places. And we need to remember that for both Republicans and Democrats. This is not
that's
about
right.
The hypocrisy. This is about a real, genuine democracy. Look, if it's all right with you, my brother, I want to thank you again for coming on the show. I want to
thank you. It was a pleasure for me to be on. You know what I mean? Really.
Thank you so much, my brother. I'm going to switch back now to Sister Betty and see if she wants to go back to our previous conversation. And, again, I want to thank you very, very much.
Okay, you're absolutely
welcome. I want to acknowledge who Brother Razakhan is. Brother Razakhan is a political prisoner, recently released himself, and he had a lot to do, like you, Brother Larry, in escaping the gulag. He was a jailhouse lawyer, like you, Brother Larry.
Mm-hmm.
He has made a real difference in the Mamiya Coalition, the Free Mamiya Coalition, because he brings the reality of what we must do in order to be successful to liberate our political prisoners. That it is not just a question of the law, because we don't have law.
That's right.
We have a ruling elite. And one of the...
Go ahead.
Hello?
Russian solution of the... discussing is, what does that mean? What is the legacy of that revolution to us today?
Hello?
I can hear you. We're breaking up.
Oh, no, it keep cutting off. I was thought maybe I just got cut off.
Okay.
Is this any better?
Yeah.
Is this clearer? Gentlemen, can you hear me now?
I can hear you now.
I can hear you.
Okay. One of the things, and I hope Joel and Brother Tom Syracuse are listening, one of the things Ralph and I talk about is what the communists meant to black people in the South in the 20s and 30s. And one of the things that represented was real representation for lawyers when a black man was accused of something heinous. a heinous crime. But usually it was a communist lawyer represented. And I want to say that again. This is what one of the legacies, positive legacies of the Russian Revolution in to me, you know, in the South, that 9 times out of 10, when they got a lawyer to represent, when the NAACP could get a lawyer, it was someone that was a member of the Communist Party. It was a lawyer that had the courage to go down there and represent somebody black. And they didn't do it because they wanted to take over the movement. They did it because they recognized that this was a war against the fascists. They understood that.
Mm-hmm.
And what's troubling me about the legacy of the Russian Revolution today is I think a lot of our brothers and sisters who try to pull that mantle around their shoulders are really into self-aggrandizement and are not in it as liberal raiders. And I think this is one of the reasons our movement is stuck and can't move forward because of these contradictions. And, again, I want to give a shout-out to people like Joel and you, Larry, and you, Brother Raza Khan, and the members of the Manhattan Green Party who took a stand, and they spent hours and energy fighting for Troy Davis when his story was almost not heard of for a while in New York City. It's this kind of diligence that seems to be lacking and this type of solidarity that we don't seem to have enough of in terms of freeing our political prisoners.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
You said that's really right.
It's time for us to regain that solidarity, not only to regain, but to intensify that solidarity. I know that we can do this. Why do I know that? Because if we don't do this, Mother Earth will not survive. It's just that simple. So I know we can do this. So having said that, I'm going to revert back to you, Sister Betty Davis. And by the way, it is wonderful that you give kudos to us, but let us understand that, Sister, you've been involved in the struggle for many years yourself. As an educator, as a teacher, okay, and let us understand that all of us or none of us. So thank you, Sister Betty. And you know, and back to you. Where do we go from here on this radio show?
Well, one of the things, you know, we're going down down the aisle at this point, heading toward the end of the program, and what I'd like is just each one of you to give us your ideas on the way you think this election is going to go from your perspective. I know Tom Syracuse was moving in that direction when Brother Raza Khan got on aboard, and I know that Brother Joel will want to chime in on that too. So I think we'll give Larry, if it's all right with you, we'll give Brother Tom a chance to chime in. Then we'll go to Joel, Raza Khan, and then yourself.
Absolutely.
Okay, Brother Tom, if you're still with us, you got the mic.
Yeah.
And then Joel, we'll go.
You want, this is Tom. You want me to say something?
Where do you think this election is
going
to go?
Where the election is going to go?
Yeah.
Well, I think that the Republicans are going to nominate somebody like Jeb Bush, even though he's not too popular, because, as I said before, the ruling elite cannot have somebody embarrassing like Carson or Donald Duck Trump to be president of the United States. So they'll have to find somebody who doesn't say outrageous things and who will be their tool. And the Democrats will, I believe, will nominate Hillary Clinton. Now, probably Hillary Clinton will win the election. But this is one person that's not going to vote for Hillary Clinton. Whoever the person that the Green Party nominates will have my vote. Of course, a lot of people will say, well, isn't that a wasted vote? You know that you're not going to win. Well, it's not a wasted vote. It's a wasted vote to vote for one of these phonies, whether coming out of the Republican Party or Democratic Party. That's the wasted vote. That's
go ahead,
my
yes, hello. Yes, hello. Can you hear me? Yeah. Yes, okay. I'd like to push this idea of having alternative elections, because it's not really what the outcome, like who's going to sit in the White House, whether the votes are counted correctly or not. That's the important thing about the election. It's that the election, the entire election is organized to create the illusion that the voting electorate is any source of the real power, that there's a certain nominating process that goes on within the different parties. There's people, especially since the JFK assassination, have to be aware that even these candidates are basically at gunpoint, although there are many other ways that can be used to create a scandal to eliminate a candidate that they don't want, or one that's just not the preferred candidate. I think that the rather than looking at what personalities are going to be regurgitated into office, the way the election is structured, is that the progressive forces should come together and hold an alternative election consisting of those parties who, to one extent or another, have committed themselves to fighting this system, and to try to attract a section of the population to cast, even if it's a protest vote, but if it could be a collective protest vote against the way that the election has turned into a total fraud in terms of the official election, and to participate in voting for people that are motivated by fighting against the depredations, crimes, and atrocities that make up this system from day to day, and can begin to act as if we're forming an alternative government, an alternative power, I should say a legitimate government, and that we're rebuilding a real democratic republic. And if that could be done based on even slightly awakening the population, that will pave the way for combining the democratic and the socialist perspectives, because I believe that people, once they're awakened, can be motivated to support politically the interests of the overwhelming majority of the people, and especially against those who have done so much damage and are threatening to destroy the planet today. So I want to push the idea of not just commenting about who can win the election, but how this could be addressed by the progressive forces, how the election could be challenged.
Right on. Let me say this right now, that it's not an election at all. It is a C-election. It is time for us to be honest about that. We're not electing nobody. It is a C-election.
And if it's a selection, then it's not democracy. And if it's not democracy, it's hypocrisy. And I like your ideas. I think your ideas, it's not an alternative party. It's not an alternative government. We're talking about, I like what you said, my brother. We're talking about building a legitimate government of, by, and for the people. Want to talk about the Constitution? Let's make it real. You know, let's keep it real. All right? So I love that. What can I say? All power to the people. Let me shut up. You excited me. What can I say?
Okay, Brother Razakhan, can you give us some of your thoughts?
Yeah, well, I take resisting over Emmanuel Amin, Rap Brown said years ago, when our votes start to count, they're going to change the law. And because our vote has started to count, that's exactly what they're doing. All the laws are changing to our detriment. And but what really gives me no trust in the voting system, because they got a Diebold voting machine company that puts out the machine. Here's people that has went to jail for bribery, all kinds of criminal activities, and we still buy their voting machines and has tried to put some trust in them. And this happened in Ohio in 2003. The guy that got the contract to put the voting machines in Ohio guaranteed George Bush he would win. And that's exactly what happened. But they was his machines. And they came up, there was a flaw in one of the machines, and the guy was saying that if it was a flaw, it was by accident. You know what I'm saying? He didn't never say it wasn't a flaw, but Kerry never challenged it. You know what I mean? So I just don't have no faith in his voting system.
Right on. Bottom line is we don't have a voting system. We have a selection system, and when you think about it, I mean, think about the very term voting machine. What the hell does that have to do with democracy? Voting machine? Yeah, we got a machine all right, but it's not the machine of the people, everyday, ordinary, black, white, brown, red, and yellow people. But I'm talking too much. I'm going to stop. I'm going to defer right now back to Sister Betty.
Lucas, with everybody.
Go ahead, Sister. You break it up. Keep talking, Sister, because you're breaking up.
I would like everybody to take 2 minutes to comment on the Black Lives Matter role in this upcoming election. Could you hear me?
Yeah.
We hear you.
So 2 minutes, everybody, and we'll close out the show with that.
All right, who do you want to start?
Yeah, I hear the background noise too.
Black Lives Matter.
All right, then somebody say something, damn it.
Oh, I thought it was cut off. I heard it went. Go ahead. You start.
Go ahead, you start.
Yeah. I think so far there have been several interventions that some of the major politicians' speeches and so on. Mostly it's the ones that I've seen have been concentrated on, I think, one of Hillary's rallies and one of Bernie Sanders. But really, the Black Lives Matter movement, and I noticed it makes the establishment furious whenever it shows up, because it reminds everybody that everything that's going on, insofar as anything democratic is concerned, it is a total fraud. And really, it should be present at all the appearances of any of these candidates, because the Black Lives Matter movement has focused attention on the real nature of the police as an occupation army and as an army of stormtroopers instead of what's called law enforcement. So it's done a tremendous amount to raise people's consciousness, to bring thousands of people into the street, many for the first time, and I'd like to see it continue and get a little bit louder.
Okay, your 2 minutes is up. Go ahead, my brother.
Okay, my take on that is the whole system is rotten, and if Black Lives Matter, then they would take it to the Republicans as well. But I also have a problem with the new Black Panthers when they were supposedly out there. You know what I mean? Where were when the Oath Keepers was saying that we protecting the property and these Black Lives Matter better not come nowhere near us? Where were they? You know what I'm saying?
Right.
We got to be serious about what we're saying. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I mean, because it's just ridiculous as far as that's concerned. We got to understand that this is a war. They are trying to kill us all, not just the little kids, whatever the case may be. They got all the warriors locked down. And as far as I'm concerned, as long as they are incarcerated, I'm still incarcerated. And I act just
sure
like that.
Right. Sure you're right, brother. Look here. Sister Betty, can I say my 2 minutes?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. Well, look here. I'm going to say what Brother Rob Pointer said. Black lives have never mattered, and they will never matter until they matter to black people. Now,
that's right.
You know, I'm sick and tired of, you know, so-called black lives running around. Black lives matter. All right? But that's not a demand. We need demands. What do we want? We know black lives matter. You know, it's Frederick Douglass. You know, as Frederick Douglass said, without a demand, I have to agree with Glenn Ford of Black Agenda Report. We must have a demand. We know Black
That's
Lives
right.
Matter, but without demand. All right, so I'm done. That's my 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Love you. All power to the people.
Okay.
I agree absolutely what was just said, that the only time black lives will matter if the black community itself, allied with truly progressive whites, come up with a coalition with specific demands. And one of those demands is to eliminate centralized, politically controlled police departments and put the police under the control of where they belong, the communities. And until that is done, you're going to have the police as a brutal force to protect the ruling elite in this country.
Mm-hmm. 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 What's up, Sister Betty?
Hey, well.
Oh.
We listen to you. We can't hear you, though. You're going in and out.
Okay. We're
See, that's
going
part
to...
of that. They don't want us to hear her.
Okay. Oh, I'm sorry. How's this? Is this any better?
Yeah, I can
Is
hear
it
you.
Better?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I wanted to bring out one essential critique, and I think it has – I like what was said about the critique of Black Lives Matter, Brother Pinkney, by the Black Agenda Report. And I want to remind people that I went to the UN discussion of the plight of the African people of African descent all over the world. Black Lives Matter made a presentation. They never talked in terms of imperialism. And they never talked in terms of capitalism. So I don't know how you can analyze racism if you don't bring those two in. And so I think they bear watching, and I think it's up to us who call ourselves the progressive as Tom was saying, is to present that list of demands in a way that must be heard. And with that,
that's right.
I really have to say thank you. You really helped this sister and this program make a difference. And on that, we're going to wish you all good wealth and a successful liberation struggle.
Okay, thank you, because it was a pleasure being on.
Thank you, brother.
Thank you.